Let's start.
Okay. About cause and condition this morning. We talked about that with Betty. As Sarah said, kusala karma. And akusala karma is producing a result in the form of rebirth or the sense cognitions of seeing, hearing, etc. Or it produces rupas, certain rupas, the senses, and a few others. That is one condition, really. We call it karma condition, but that we can call cause since it produces result. But when we talk about conditions, there are 24 types, and it is a very wide meaning. So it includes many more realities.
I think I understood.
Yeah.
This is the last session for Elena and Florence, so I think we should really cover the basics, keep talking about the main points, the basic points, so that it's clear when you leave and you don't feel confused by it all. So do you have any questions, first of all, about the basic points that we've been discussing so much about cheetahs, chetasikas, and rupas? Is it clear what is chitta, what is chetasika, and what is rupa, and why we're talking about that? So can you give us some examples of chittas, and then some examples of rupas, and some examples of chetasikas? Let's start with chittas. What is chitta now?
It could be something is heard.
Something is?
Said or something is heard? No, something is said. Heard.
Something is heard.
Heard, no.
What is heard?
The chitta, no?
Okay. So, at a moment of touching, when there is unpleasant or painful feeling, at that moment of touching, like maybe touching the sharp object, touching something, and the touching is chitta.
It's chitta, yeah.
And the painful feeling is the painful feeling with the chitta, with that chitta. Is it chitta or is it something else?
No.
What is the painful feeling? Yes. Chetasika. Okay. Because the chitta has to arise with many chetasikas. So at that moment of touching or experiencing the very cold object or the very hard object, for example, the touching is chitta, but the feeling, the painful feeling is chetasika, the contact is chetasika. What about the memory? Is the sanya at that moment?
Yes.
And why is there sanya at that moment?
Because pain, we call it pain, so it's a memory of. It can belong to, no? I don't know. Something like
that. Sanya arises with every chitta.
Yes.
So at that moment, the sanya experiences the same object that the chitta experiences. So coldness or the hardness, that is what is experienced.
It's rupa.
And that coldness or hardness is rupa, yeah. Okay? And that is what is experienced by the chitta. And the sanya and the contact and all the chetasikas.
Okay.
And the painful feeling, what is does the painful feeling experience?
It experiences the so the memory.
Chetasika. We have a memory of something that remind it is painful.
So the chitta experiences, yes, let's say, hardness at this moment. So the sanya, the memory, marks or, and remembers that hardness, exactly the same object.
You remind that it is hard and then...
Stop. Just experiences that hardness, that's all. It doesn't think about it or anything at that moment. It just for that instant of touching, it experiences the hardness. The citta experiences the hardness and the memory marks that object. Yes, it's a chetasika and it marks that hardness. And the feeling, the painful feeling, feels that object in a unpleasant way. It feels it just for a moment and then gone. So no idea about why it's painful or what the object is or anything else. No thinking about it at all. Just a moment of experiencing. And what about what else is citta at this moment?
Is what we hear.
So hearing is citta. Yeah. But what is heard at that moment, is that citta?
No.
What is that?
This is citta sika.
What is heard?
Maybe I can try to compare with something that happened two nights ago. And maybe you can tell me if I'm wrong or not. We were in the bedroom and we can hear some noise. And we identify this noise as it is insect make the noise. But so we hear the noise that is a cheetah. There is a noise, this is rupa. And then we hear the noise, it was cheetah. But we identify the noise, it was insect, but when we checked, it was a speaker was broken, and that made the noise, it was... and this, it was chitasika, and that can make imagine that it is insect. I could imagine the insect
and
with
story,
the...
Different story of...
and then it was a
the magician
chitasika.
At work.
A lot of...
Still creating this wonderful long story. This is what we were talking about this morning. So at the moment of hearing, then or now, the hearing is citta, just hearing the sound. No thought about it, no idea about insects, nothing else. It just hears the sound. So many, many moments of hearing, many, many sounds. And at the moment of hearing, there must be citta seekers arising with the hearing.
Memory, then like memory about the insect.
Not yet. Because at the moment of hearing, there is memory, but it's just marking the object, sound.
Mm.
No idea of insects or anything.
Mm.
So the hearing hears sound, and at the moment of hearing, the memory marks that sound, marks and remembers it. So later there can be thinking about it, but it just marks and remembers it. And the feeling with hearing is neutral feeling at that moment, and it experiences the object, the contact experiences the object, only sound that is experienced. Later there is thinking about an impression of the sound, about the loudness, about the volume, about the kind of sound, and much, much later thinking about stories of insects and so on. But at the moment of hearing, only sound is heard. No idea of insect or anything else. Okay.
Thank you.
I think what Sarah is explaining is very useful as a reminder, because in daily life, now we hear, we understand what she said, but when it actually occurs in daily life, we are so forgetful and we are absorbed in the story of the insect and I am hearing. But this helps to discuss and consider more. But we are really forgetful all the time.
Particularly we forget that actually at the moment of hearing, it's just sound, just the world of sound at the moment. We find it important what kind of sounds are heard. And there are all these stories about insects and trucks and people and voices, but actually it's only sound that's heard. And we usually there's attachment to some sounds and aversion to other sounds, but actually it's only sound that's heard. But because of memory, there are all these stories about different sounds and attachment to some, aversion to others. And it's the same with visible object, it's the same with odor, it's the same with taste. Like we have long stories about what we like eating and don't like eating and about what we ate for lunch. But actually at the moment of tasting, it's only taste that's experienced for that moment, followed by long stories about the food and so on.
Elena, look at this and close your eyes. You can remember what you just saw, right? That's because when with seeing, there's the chetasika, sanya, which has marked what's seen. And when you recall, it's because that memory with seeing has marked. It just simply marks. It's like here, mark, 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 mark. That's what it meant, is meant by chetasika, one particular chetasika performing its that function. Chitta does not do that. It's,
but you're talking, in fact, about seeing and thinking as marking, because we mark the image of the object already, so
right,
it's actually
right,
the
thinking. Right, but just a crude example to show that that's how chetasika is. Without that function of marking, you wouldn't be able to remember when thinking about it that what you just experienced, because the sanya just marks.
And getting back to sound, suddenly there's the sound of rain on the top of the canvas roof here, and immediately there's the story about what's going to happen, will it be a heavy rainstorm, what shall I do, and this sort of thing. So these stories are all conditioned by memories and past ways of thinking about things. Things we like and dislike, things we worry about, and so forth.
This shows that it is all about daily life and not in the book, no book, no knowledge, but knowing everything Dhamma or everything that is real in our daily life at this moment. That's why it's useful that Jonathan gave this example of the rain, because we were already thinking of a story about the rain.
In order to be one's own understanding, I think that it needs the considering from hearing. For example, if we think, what are they now? Is there anything now? See, to just think about what is now appearing. Is there anything now or nothing? We don't have to think. I think that it's now, it's here. Everyone knows. Is there anything now?
Yes.
Yes, please, what is it?
Many things, no? Cheetahs.
I don't know what cheetah is.
Yeah, me too.
So just now, as you know, usually, is there anything now?
Yes.
What is it?
Realities?
I don't know that.
No, no, not from what you've...
You to talk as though you've not heard those words.
Okay.
Because if someone asked you and you say citta or reality, they don't know what.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I say it simply.
What is there now? Is there anything now?
But there is life, people.
Really? Do you see life?
I can feel it.
What is life?
I don't know.
See, what is there now? Is there anything now? Appearing.
I don't know. Can somebody answer?
How do you know there's life now?
And if someone asks you what is there now, you say life, is that the answer?
No, it's an answer, but it's not the answer.
Somebody else, not a Dhamma, not in a Dhamma situation, somebody else just ask what's there now.
The present, or present, there is now. There is a now, I don't know. But what is it now?
Because something happened, and then...
just... too much to think about. Just, what is there anything now? Or nothing at all?
No, I don't know. I'm confused about all we say, so I don't know.
Convince, please.
We can see and we can...
No, I mean just now. Just one thing, now.
What's felt?
The feeling, something.
But for sure, I'm feeling uncomfortable. That's
yeah, okay.
You okay?
Yeah, that's now. Yes,
okay,
yeah.
That's now. Okay.
Is it real?
But for me, it's real. But
not only for you.
Yeah.
Whenever it arises, it feels right.
Right.
So there is a reality which is real. Feeling is real, right?
Right.
Is it your feeling?
The feeling.
Is it your?
It's a feeling.
Can you make it arise?
Yes, but it's gone already. I mean, it was here and now, I feel better. So I feel different now.
Can you stop an unpleasant feeling arising?
No.
If there are conditions, it has to arise, right? No one can...
Yeah.
Because no one would choose to have uncomfortable feelings, so it's not like you have chosen for it to arise, but because of the different circumstances, there were conditions for it to arise, and there were conditions for it to fall away immediately. Not your choice at all, right?
Right.
Even it's there, no one knows the nature of it at all. One takes it instantly as I feel. See? That is right or wrong.
I don't. But right. Yeah.
Feeling feels. It has arisen by conditions. It's proper condition. No one can make it arise because no one likes to have unpleasant feeling at all. But it's there by conditions. So it's a reality. It doesn't belong to anyone, and no one can make it arise. But the point is that when it's there, ignorance cannot understand it as it is, as just a reality, not anyone at all. So, having heard this, it depends on the wise attention or consideration, whether it's right or it's wrong. Can feeling be me? Can it be my feeling? Or it just feel? It's a reality which arises to feel, that's all. It cannot see, it cannot hear, it cannot think. It just arises and feels. And then gone completely. It's what is right and what is wrong, what is true and what is not true.
So the answer to what is it now? So what is it?
Whatever.
What is that feeling?
Seeing, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. But ignorance cannot see the difference between feeling and seeing at all. But they are different. Feeling cannot see, and seeing cannot feel. So nothing can belong to anyone at all. They are conditioned, otherwise they cannot arise to be such that. For example, this arises to be hard. It cannot be sweet by conditions. So in one's life, there are so many things we take from my life, but actually they are different realities from birth. So what was born or what is born?
What is born?
When we say a dog, a cat, people, human being.
At the
start of life, at the first moment of life.
Yeah.
What was born?
The starting of feeling or the starting of thinking?
Well, there would have been the start of feeling, okay. And what else must have been born from the very first moment of life? What is there to every moment of life, including the very first moment of life?
The memory.
Memory, yes. And
memory.
And what is the chief in experiencing the object?
Accumulate.
Yeah, not yet. What about the cheetah, the first cheetah of life? Because at each moment of life there is cheetah. So cheetah arises at the first moment of life, and cheetah arises at every moment through life. And at the last moment of life, there is cheetah. So there's actually cheetah from the very beginning, right through life, arising and falling away, accompanied by different chetusikas. And certain rupas also are conditioned from the first moment of life. But the answer Jan was looking for is that we think a baby is born, a person is born, an animal is born, but actually it's cheetah that is born. Just like now, we think it's a person, a dog, a baby, but actually there is just cheetah, chetusika, and rupa now, and it was the same at the first moment of life.
So which cheetah is born at the very first moment of life? But which one?
The first chitta of the life.
Okay.
Getting back to the earlier point of the feeling, are you feeling uncomfortable? And Ajahn said, is it feeling or is it I feel? When there's feeling uncomfortable, clearly the feeling is there. But what or where is the I at that moment? It's just a concept we have. And a way of expressing that there is feeling at the present moment. Because as far as can be discerned, there is feeling, just like there is seeing now and hearing now. But if we ask what or where is the I who is hearing or seeing, what's the answer? There's no specific presently arising reality that we can identify as being the I.
Just cheetah which is born, is just feeling which feels, is just sanya which remembers. And the first cheetah of life, it's not a moment of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching or thinking. It's just a cheetah which arises, which has the function of birth, of being born. And it's the same kind of cheetah as the cheetahs during deep sleep.
And there is no cheetah in the belly of the mother, because there is life already.
When we talk about the beginning of life,
birth,
we're talking about the,
yeah,
first moment of conception.
Okay.
That's the first moment of life, the first moment of conception, unidentifiable.
Yeah, 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 okay.
And at that moment, that first cheetah, it follows immediately after the death consciousness of the previous life, and it just has the function of being born, and it doesn't experience the object through any doorway, but it's accompanied by different chetasikas. If it's this human realm, then it's the result of kusala karma from the past, wholesome deed from the past. If it's in an animal realm, it's the result of akusala, unwholesome karma from the past.
But obviously it's not something that can be known. Unlike the seeing now and the hearing now, we are just learning the theory, if you like. What is of more importance is what is appearing at the present moment and can be directly known. What is appearing now are normally taken for things other than what they are. Some examples we have been given. We take the seeing of the room and people as being moments of seeing, whereas we've learnt that in fact they are the moments of thinking that follow moments of seeing. And likewise with the hearing. Hearing hears sound, but it's the thinking moments that follow the hearing of the sound that understands the meaning of what is being said. The reason we're interested in present moment things is so they can be understood for what they are, not so they can be changed in any way, but just so there's a better understanding of what life is at the present moment.
Anna, confused or clear so far?
I will be confused a long time.
Yes. So ask
any point that is confusing?
Yeah, any point is half confusing.
Is it clear what is citta, what is cetasika, and what is rupa?
Yes.
And at the very first moment of life, citta, cetasika, rupa, throughout life, only ever citta, cetasika, and rupa. So never I who experiences pain or unpleasant feeling or anything else, always citta and cetasikas which experience only.
But I have to digest what you are saying because I still feel I,
yes.
I just understand you are saying the I not exist. So, okay, I agree with you, but I don't understand what you say.
So, when we think about I, what is I? What is I? Is there I now? What is I?
I don't know if it is what is the grouping, all the feeling and the group, all the thinking and group, or and then I feel it is I.
But so it's
to throw this away. I don't know how to do this.
Yes.
So to follow what you say, okay, I not exist.
If there was,
I can agree, but I don't understand how it's possible to say,
because
okay,
it's very through. Hard because we are very conditioned by this, and now we feel like baby, like it's very hard for us to express ourselves.
And if there was no seeing, no hearing, no smelling, tasting, touching, thinking, would there be any idea of I?
Can you say it again?
If there was no seeing now, no hearing, no smelling, tasting, touching, thinking, no visible object seen, no sound heard,
okay,
would there be any idea of I?
No, because except if we had the memory of this.
So then it's the memory of I.
Yeah.
So it's because of seeing now or the hearing now, then there is the idea of I see, I hear. But if there was no seeing, there would be no thinking about I see, I hear. So actually, seeing is one thing, hearing is another thing. Thinking with memory about an idea of I who see or hear is something else. So it's an idea that I see, I hear. But I agree, it takes a lot of considering to get used to begin to understand.
Yeah. So then, is it a citta if at the moment I have the feeling something is understood and then it's not? And then it's gone, I mean.
So the citta experiences maybe the right idea about how it's just seeing which sees, and at that moment of right considering, panya is there and it understands it just a little for a moment, and then the next moment thinking with ignorance as usual and not understanding, and this is most of life. Mm. So it's always like that, because the moments of understanding don't last at all, just as the moments of ignorance don't last, and then maybe moments of attachment, but they also don't last. Nothing lasts in life. And if one feels disappointed that there's no more understanding. Well, disappointment is another reality. So it's always like that. And it doesn't matter at all, because understanding has to begin to accumulate or develop very, very slowly. And in the beginning, it has to be very slight and very little. It's not firm at all yet. But gradually, through hearing and considering, it begins to grow. It gradually becomes a little bit firmer, a little bit firmer.
So little by little. Little by little.
Little by little, very little by very little.
Now, some people may think that because there's I here, that I can see, I can hearing, I can hear, I can touch, I can smell. But it's the reverse. Because there is seeing, hearing, smelling, touching, thinking, then that's why there's the idea of an I. But in reality, there's no place for this I. There's just these different realities, one after the other, arising and falling away by conditions. That's what life is. The I is a misunderstanding.
I have one question. If we talk about non-self, we still talk about self. So if it doesn't exist, it exists in a little bit.
It's the word non-self is used because there's a character, you could say impersonal, even though the word personal is there, but the word impersonal actually describes certain thing, and that's what non-self also is meant to describe. It's not saying that there's a self which is not there, or there's no. It's just to show one characteristic, or one general characteristic of all three, all realities, which is impermanence, unsatisfactory, and this, the third one, non-self. It's just a word for that characteristic.
Yeah, but if the world exists, so...
We have the very strong idea of I, of a self. But that is an assumption, because there's never the experiencing of something that can be identified as the self. When it's said that dhammas are non-self, it is indicating that what we take for self is not to be found in that reality.
So then if it doesn't exist, why we don't have this feeling from the very beginning?
Well, we've talked before about accumulations and how tendencies, likes and dislikes, have been accumulated over previous lifetimes. And it's the same with ideas about the way things are. Understanding and misunderstandings have also been accumulated and carried forward. We're born into this life with the view that there is a self. We are born in this life already having the idea from previously that there must be a self. And because it's the common view of everyone, be difficult not to have that idea, because the whole world
so
is brought
up. So we are born with this idea, but we must find a way to discover and to experiment that there is not... I don't understand why we are born with this idea and why we grow up with this idea, why we live with this idea.
Mm-hmm.
And then the message is...
It's the same question as why are we born with certain likes or dislikes already.
Okay.
Certain flavors that we like, foods, colors, preferences. They are not all acquired in this lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Because we can see even young children, young babies, know what they like and dislike in terms of food or comfort, bodily temperature, that sort of thing, painful feeling.
Morning we mentioned one word came up in someone's question, arahat, referring to the one for whom all defilements have been completely eradicated. No more ignorance, no more attachment, and how there is no more new karma. And for that one, no more birth. The stream of life is finished at the end of that life, because the cause of being born, of the continuation of life, is ignorance and attachment. Ignorance and attachment is the nature of life. If there was no ignorance, if no ignorance had been accumulated, there would have been no birth in this life for the one we call you or your little girl. So it's because of ignorance that there is birth. So the nature of life is that so much ignorance and attachment has been accumulated from lifetime to lifetime. And without the Buddha's teachings, there is no way out, no way to eradicate that ignorance and attachment. And so life continues on again and again, round after round. And what we learn is that each of these realities we're talking about, seeing, hearing, pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, each one is impermanent. And actually it's unsatisfactory because it's impermanent. We think life is wonderful and there's so much attachment to everything experienced, but each of these realities doesn't last an instant. Actually, it's unsatisfactory. And so the truth is that most of life is full of ignorance and attachment to that which is actually unsatisfactory. So there is ignorance from the very beginning in life and attachment from the very beginning because it hasn't been eradicated, and this is the nature of life if no understanding is developed to the degree that it's eradicated and the danger is really understood. Usually in the beginning when people hear about the Buddha's teachings, they don't think there is much ignorance. I brought a friend to the discussion in Thailand a couple of weeks ago, and he said, no, not much ignorance, you know, working, seeing, hearing. But actually we don't realize, even now, whenever there's no understanding, no kusala of any kind, ignorance is there, ready to condition more ignorance in life. And it's like that for anyone who is born from the very beginning. So when understanding begins to develop, it's so little amongst all this ignorance and attachment, but it can begin to accumulate, it can begin to develop. And it's the only way that can eventually lead to the end of this cycle of ignorance and attachment.
Some people are shocked because when they start to develop the Dhamma, more understanding, then they begin to realize, oh, we have so many unwholesome moments, many more than we ever thought, and they are a bit shocked.
And even?
Mind as us, it's more than what we think now.
And even if you struggle to see the possibility of rebirth and having born in this life with tendencies already and ideas and views about the way things are, because the rest of the world all thinks there is an I, a self, it would be inevitable that anyone brought up in the world would have that idea too.
And given the nature of citta and cetasikas, it rises and falls away so fast, one after the other. Like now there's the impression of me sitting here talking to you. It's so fast, so many arising and falling away, that this wrong impression is likely to happen. It's so easy to happen, right? So we don't ask when it all started, but we can understand from hearing the Dhamma that this reality we call ignorance means it doesn't understand what's really happening, doesn't understand the present moment. And this is the cause for other unwholesome tendencies like attachment, because if reality is actually has already fallen away, what's the point of being attached? Attached to what? Attached to nothing, right? And angry at what? So that's because ignorance is the root. So ignorance is also the root of wrong understanding, which is also another reality, which we've accumulated through many lifetimes. So it's what we are actually born with, in a way, to this idea of an I. You know, it's going to arise.
So I think that it's worthwhile studying just one word at a time in order to really understand and have more firm confidence on what is right and what is not right. For example, if we talk about yesterday, it's gone completely. Tomorrow hasn't come yet. But what about now? It can be known at the moment when it is there. For example, the question like, what is there? Is there anything now? It is the beginning of understanding what is there in each moment, because life exists only in a moment only, just one moment at a time. And if there is no understanding of one moment, there is no understanding of other moment. If we wait and then postpone, when will it begin to understand whatever appears? Because there must be something or reality appears all the time. Like now, what appears nothing or something? Very natural.
What is experience now?
Thinking. Yeah.
Really? So what is thinking? It's there. You say that there is thinking. So what is the nature of thinking?
What is the nature of thinking?
Thinking.
What is the nature of thinking? So what do I have to say? Do I have to say something? What is it? What is the nature of thinking?
Is thinking a reality?
Yes.
What kind of reality is it?
You try to think of the name, but not the characteristic of that which thinks.
Yeah.
And even you understand, when you understand the characteristic of it, no matter what you call it, right?
Yes.
But when you use just the word, it doesn't mean that you have understanding that reality so much. That's why there is thinking. Everyone thinks most of the time.
Mm.
No one knows what one is thinking because it's gone. As soon as one is asked, what are you thinking about? It's gone. So no direct answer at that moment at all what one thinks about, right? Because now there is thinking. And the moment ago, it's gone. Not the same one at all. But after seeing, there must be thinking. No one knows about that. That if there is no thinking from memory arising with seeing, marks of object which is seen, there cannot be moment of thinking about that which is experienced. Usually in a day, one thinks that one thing only about story, concept, but even thinking about that which is not in word yet, it's still thinking. Because it's not seeing. That's why when thinking of that which is seen does not appear, there is only the idea that I think about concept, right? In words. That's what we say, I'm thinking about this or that. But the reality which things can think about anything. Even there's no seeing, but the past experiences of experiencing different things, conditioned moment of thinking about them in different manners, like or dislike. wishful thinking or whatever. So each moment is real and there is no understanding of that which is real. So that is the idea that I am all the time. One takes realities for self. For example, now I see, I hear, I think, I like, I dislike. But actually, if there is the understanding of reality more and more, it will eliminate the idea, the clinging to the idea of self, little by little, that actually, because of understanding only, which can eliminate the idea of self. Otherwise, without understanding, there must be always the idea of self or things from life to life. But what about just birth and death? It has to be like this. No one can change the way it is, but no understanding of what is there from birth to death. But when someone just knows about that, enlighten the truth, and share or teach about that, it's something should be object of understanding, rather than not understanding like usual. For example, there is seeing now. It's so very, very difficult to getting go the idea of self from moment of seeing. But seeing, before seeing, there is no seeing. And when seeing arises, there is other reality which is no seeing, which means that seeing is gone completely, never to return at all. You cannot look for it or find it at anywhere in the world or other world at all. Just once in lifetime or once in samsara, the circle of birth and death. Because when there is birth, there must be death, and after death, there must be birth again. As long as there are still conditions for that to arise to be birth or death, and other realities between, in between birth and death, right now. What was seeing yesterday? What was the seeing in the morning? Or just a moment ago, no one knows. So we begin to understand that what appears now. Please, anything?
I have to consider more what you said about thinking, but not in words. I'm not thinking these children are shouting, but straight away, there is the unpleasant feeling. It's a difficult subject for me.
But we have to think, and it takes a long, long time to begin to understand what it's there, which is hidden. For example, can seeing know what is there on the table?
Seeing cannot know.
So what knows?
It must be cheetah. But different from seeing.
So what is that citta, which does not see?
So it must be through the mind door.
What is that which arises through the mind door?
Thinking. Yeah, we can call it thinking.
So we can see that even before thinking in words. There must be thinking already after the moment of seeing. As the process
of seeing. There's no need to think these children are shouting.
It's like I discussed with Eleanor at the beginning, and we mentioned how hearing just hears sound, and there is thinking, but it's a long, long time before thinking thinks about the sound of the rain or the sound of the children. After hearing sound, there's just impression, just a slight impression, but already it's thinking.
No words, no thought
of any children or anything like that. It's a long time before the thinking has developed to the stage that it's thinking about children. Or because you're designers, we talk about seeing. Seeing just sees visible object. And there is not thinking about these plastic fruits on the table immediately after seeing sees visible object. There's just an impression of color or shape, and then an impression of a little more about the details. But it's not thinking about the plastic fruit on the table. It's just an impression, but there's thinking immediately. So after the seeing of what is seen, the visible object, already there's thinking about the shape, the color, the form. And after many, many countless moments of thinking, there comes to be the thinking about the objects on the table.
It shows how fast siddhas are and the different processes. But it takes long. We have to really consider again and again and hear again and again. And we know that we don't really understand yet all.
And one point you mentioned earlier, Florence, I think was like, well, why do we talk about I this and I that? So just because there's understanding, as Ajahn mentioned yesterday, doesn't mean we change our conversation. We still say, I'm going to the restaurant for lunch, or I'm going to have my breakfast now. And it depends on the understanding what is meant, whether there's an idea that there really is an I that's going to the restaurant, or whether it's just conventional language. We still communicate in the same way, still talk about our family members or little Alice playing in the garden, just as usual. So it doesn't mean we speak in a different way, but there's the beginning of understanding that no matter what we say or what we're talking about or how life goes, actually there are just these different realities, these different namas and rupas.
It's just like learning the new topics or subjects. Like when you learn any subject, but this is life or reality. Is there only one kind of citta? That's right. Altogether, there are 89 types or kinds of citta. Like seeing is one and thinking is another one. Hearing, smelling, each is different ones. Altogether, 89 types, and we learn just to understand little by little. Who can stop thinking?
Someone who doesn't live. So when you die, maybe you stop thinking?
By conditions.
Ah, okay. So nobody?
Nobody at all. When you know more and more, there are different realities. Not anyone can be taken for self or mind at all.
And as we've discussed earlier, when we talk about not self, what we actually mean is not able to control everything conditioned. Not self means that there is no control over what is arising at the present moment. It arises by conditions.
You just say no one can control what's happening? This is what you say, no? It's arising by a condition. Yeah. Right.
And yeah. All these things.
But immediately what I'm thinking about is I want to understand the condition. You see? But which are they?
It's conditioned to think about. If you haven't heard about the word condition at all, it's a thinking about wanting to understand better.
But then, I mean, if I heard about this information, if I hear about this information, my curiosity maybe, or something like this, want to understand more about if this is happening. So if it's by condition, I want to know about
it. Yeah.
So
everything is...
Can we learn about condition?
Yes, right now.
Right now.
Mm-hmm. And curiosity is also conditioned.
You're asking this question because in reality there is just citta chetasikas arising and falling away by conditions.
But sometimes I want to understand why right now I think like this, or why this thinking is in my mind.
It's not you, it's just Chitta, Chitta.
But sorry, I'm still attached to this. I mean, it's not
so
natural.
So slowly you can understand that it's this what you take for you is actually Chittas and Chittasikas.
Okay.
So now we come to a different area, and that is that just as everything is conditioned, there cannot be choosing what is to be understood. We've talked about development of understanding of the reality of the present moment, and we've talked about how the present moment is conditioned and how understanding is conditioned too. So that means that we cannot choose what is to be understood at any given time. If understanding occurs, then it's by conditions. And those conditions, the Buddha explained, include hearing the truth about the way things are, so that there can be reflection on that and consideration of it as regards what is happening at the present moment. And so there may be a better understanding of the reality of the present moment, but the object of that understanding will occur by conditions, not by our choosing to have a better understanding of, say, seeing or hearing or sound or thinking.
So now, for one person, we can say one person, there is thinking about how can I understand more. For someone else, there's thinking about, oh, how lost I am. And someone else thinking about the fruit on the table, thinks about different objects. What is the reason why thinking thinks one moment about plastic fruit and about understanding the next moment and about being lost at another moment? What is the reason for that? Do you have any idea?
That's
about conditions.
Yeah.
What kind of conditions?
Vincent gave the answer. What kind of condition?
We talked about one mental factor, one chetasika this morning, that conditions a lot of thinking, and that is sanya, or memory.
Yeah.
If there was no memory about different colours and different plastic fruit and what it is, there would be no thinking about it. Like your little girl very quickly learns who is mama, and there is thinking about mama because of memory, that this one is mama but the other one is not mama. So from the beginning, there is memory of different objects being experienced, and that conditions thinking in different ways. And we can say that this habit of thinking about being lost or fruit or developing understanding accumulates. It becomes the pattern, the tendency. So what was thought about yesterday is a condition for what is thought about today. Yesterday there was thinking about what rupa is, the reality that doesn't experience anything. So today when someone mentions rupa, it means something. There is thinking about rupa as visible object or sound, because there has been the hearing about it and the memory of that, what that word means. So the habits accumulate, so thinking this way or thinking that way. So this is a condition in itself, the way that that kind of thinking, that pattern of thinking accumulates. So the reason that now we're talking about realities is so that it is a condition for thinking to begin to turn more towards what life really is at this moment. So that, for example, when you are on the aeroplane flying home tomorrow, there may be conditions to reflect about life in a way that's different from a few days ago. There may be more reflection that thinking is just a reality, not self. Hearing is another reality, because that pattern of thinking wisely about life has begun to be accumulated. That tendency is becoming a habit instead of just the usual thinking about other objects. So in between thinking about your children and the trip and other things, gradually there's more wise thinking or more wise considering about what life really is at this moment. Does that answer the question?
And can we explain what happened to people who have Alzheimer's?
Yeah. There is still thinking and there's still memory, but the thinking is not about the objects that conventionally we think it should be thinking about, like the word that was said a few moments ago, maybe completely forgotten already, but actually
then they have no attachment.
There is a lot of attachment just like now, because that tendency is still there, a lot of attachment, a lot of sorrow, a lot of ignorance, and it only is for a moment. Like my mother had Alzheimer's and died recently, but sometimes during the course of a conversation, some things would be just like normal, and other things we would diagnose as complete forgetfulness. But actually, citta and sanya just arises for a moment. So Alzheimer's is just a label. Actually, there's still thinking, there is still memory, there's still marking the object. Like, can you remember what you ate for lunch yesterday? Or there has to be thinking about it. It may not be very clear, not as clear as it was yesterday. Can there be remembering what happened when you were a baby? Not at all, but we don't give it a special label because it seems like normal. But it just depends on different conditions what memory remembers at each moment.
Ajahn sometimes asks, and what I find so helpful, she says, do you have a house? No, only when you are thinking about your house. So I consider that now, whether I own an apartment or only when I'm thinking about it, really.
Sarah has given many examples about conditions. And so I think in the past 2 days, we talked a lot about conditions for seeing, like the eye space, the visible object. Without those things, there cannot be seeing. So it is important to remember that conditions refer to realities. When you talk about conditions, we talk about realities, and we don't mean a conventional situation, like in the ordinary meaning of conditions.
And we have to consider what is really important in life. Like, for example, my mother would be a bit distressed. She would say, oh, I can't remember anything about any of the holidays we ever had together. I can't remember anything about the house I lived in. I can't remember who my family is. And I would say, well, all these things are unimportant in life. It doesn't matter if one's forgotten all one's holidays or the house one's lived in. All that really matters in life is goodness, developing wholesomeness now, being kind, being helpful, understanding more about life at this moment, because all those things have completely gone. It's all of no significance whatsoever. So actually, all that really matters now is just being considerate, being kind, and particularly understanding there's no self at all, just moments of seeing and hearing and thinking. So the understanding now is really what is most precious in life. Everything else will be lost in life, our home, our dear family members, our possessions, our memories of holidays, and so on. But the understanding now develops and accumulates, and that accumulation continues from life to life. So if one was to be asked what is most precious in life, actually for me, what is most precious is understanding at this very moment. And Nina can add more.
I feel too, like this moment now that we discuss Dhamma, and it's so precious, it's the most precious thing. And I want to ask you, you said when you at the funeral, you were talking to your family members who don't know any Dhamma, and I would like to know how you brought it to them.
So at my mother's funeral, this was for a very big service for her family and relatives, and most people are Christian or they have other ideas, but I talked about the wholesome qualities that I appreciated in my mother's example, and then I read a sutta, Buddhist sutta, about how actually it's the nature of life. Everyone passes on, everyone dies, a bit like the pots, the potter's pots, each one is broken sooner or later, and how only the unwise grieve and cannot accept the nature of life, and for the wise there is no grief because one understands that actually that's how life is, and actually there's death at each moment in the deepest sense. So nothing to feel sad about at all. And for the one who has passed away, I didn't say all of this, but for the one who has passed away, completely gone, new life, we're completely forgotten. At lunchtime, Ajahn reminded Nina, who mentioned her husband, and Ajahn said, completely gone, forgotten us completely. So why grieve for the one who has started a new life? And actually there was no my mother, no Nina's husband at all. Just like now, in reality, there's no Ajahn, no Jonathan. There are just different realities. So the teachings are very deep and actually affect every situation.
Yes, it's all about daily life, so there is really no Dhamma situation, because it's all about daily life. And I talked a bit with Hang about the subject of no Lodewijk, no Nina, because Ajahn also reminded me, even during life there was no Lodewijk. Lodewijk is the name of my late husband. And I said to her, well, first he did not like it, but later on he understood better. But it's a bit very shocking first, that one hears it in no Nina, no Lodewijk, and he always had trouble with that. But later on he understood more. Yeah.
And it helps a lot, because one has so much attachment usually to those who are dear to one. But appreciating that actually the truth is the attachment is really to one's own pleasant feeling, and that is what is one so concerned about, to what is seen, the visible object, to the sound, and to one's own pleasant feeling being with this one. And it's different from the quality we talked about this morning of metta or kindness or consideration, because the kindness or consideration doesn't bring any grief or disappointment, but it's our strong attachment that brings the disappointment, the grief, and the sadness.
And I talked to my niece and nephew about Dhamma. They are interested. And the question we sometimes hear is, but how do you lead your life at this moment? They think I should think constantly of Nama and Rupa, but that's not the case. It has to be natural. And people are always wondering about it when they hear about Nama and Rupa. How do I lead my life now?
I think this is Hai's question or point about, we talk about anatta, but live with atta. Would you like to mention it, Hai?
Actually, if I can ask a different question, because I think it's just, I can answer that myself, actually, it's just because...
Why don't you answer it first and then ask your other question?
Well, it's more like, I can say it's like the thinking, like, okay, I got this friend, and then they actually talk a lot about Dhamma, like quotation from Dhamma, but then at the same time, like after that, they can just be heard totally different from the just they just said. Then, for example, in one moment they say is there's nobody's there, but then the next moment they can put take a photo and then put a selfie on Facebook, for example. Okay. So I find myself that, then can you just, you know, thinking about it yourself and then don't, like, to me it have to be go together. Like, it actually, if you really understand about this, is manifest in the way that you act or the way that you behave, or that at least my expectation. But on the other hand, like, when hearing discussion and then you were saying, so the, all these condition, you know, like this. that word, that moment when it's wrong understanding or like not right understanding, then there would be doubt, there would be like questioning about why people behave a certain thing. But then it actually, if I understand that if there would be more understanding, I just could know that it just, it's non-self, it's just different accumulation, different people. But the later arise a little bit less than the first thought, which is more criticism or more judgment of the other people.
It's time to understand how much understanding of conditions are there, because it's you and your friend and the behavior and such happenings, the you and your friend are there, not the realities. But it's time to understand at that very moment about reality at that moment, to know how much understanding of conditions are there. Even right now, see how much understanding after hearing. It's the sound of telephone, not just a reality. Until it's just a reality, more and more. No one.
And I also think it's the same point that Nina mentioned just before about how there can be appreciation sometimes that, oh, no load of it, no one there. But this doesn't mean that 5 minutes later one isn't feeling sad or grieving or wanting to look at the photo, because this is just daily life and the understanding is developing and accumulating. We're not arahats without attachment or ignorance. So this is normal daily life. If one has the idea that because there's no one, one shouldn't take a selfie or look at the photos on the computer screen, this would be wrong understanding. It would be an idea of an unnatural practice, different from what is natural. Would you like?
Yes, what I found so helpful is that the Dhamma and the development of wisdom should be natural daily life. We should not try to change any accumulations, or even akusala citta arises, don't try to change it, like John always reminded us too, don't change anything, and we stress it a lot now.
Betty always has an example, her family members say, oh well, if this Dharma is so good, then why do you get angry or something? But this is also natural or daily life. Anything can arise, any habit can happen. 1 minute there may be appreciating of the Dharma, next minute there may be an outburst or getting cross with one's family members. But even then there can be understanding. It's just a natural part of life. If one thinks that one's friends shouldn't behave like this because of understanding, that's the wrong understanding. And as Ajahn said, it's clinging to the idea of people, not understanding just Dharma at that very moment.
Like I said, you give such a good example, because I remember you had also a dosa and said, no problem, it's no problem to me. I find that very good. Just a passing Dharma.
When there is the understanding of dosa as just a reality, it's conditioned. That's all.
The same way, if akusala rose and there was understanding at that moment, it's understanding, right, that it's arisen by conditions, their accumulation. So same with other people. Whatever it is, it's conditioned. There are conditions for it.
So understanding of the Dhamma makes life less complicated, more easy. Less worry. The self, no, otherwise we are so occupied of the self, this and that. But when there is less so, more understanding, it's easier.
And when one has the idea that because people have heard about Dhamma, so they shouldn't be so frivolous or this or that, actually at that moment, the reality is the thinking, the expectation, the attachment, which leads to disappointment. So at that moment, even that attachment, even that expectation can be known as just a passing Dhamma.
But I thought there's also, if one's understanding is more accumulated, there would be more tendency to do less of the previous thing, right?
It depends on the interest. For example, Nina likes to play music. So just like when she was young, before she studied the Dhamma, she liked to play music. Now she still likes to play music. We like to swim, just like we like to swim before we studied the Dhamma. So it doesn't mean that because there's more understanding, one has less interest in playing music or less interest in swimming. It may be that there are other interests that change anyway. Even for people who have no interest in the Dhamma, they may one day be interested in playing music and then at a certain stage in life not be interested. But if one has the idea that because there is more understanding of Dhamma, that there should be less interest in music or less interest in swimming, that would be a wrong idea. That would be an expectation of how life should be. Like, think of Visakha, one of the female disciples of the Buddha, who had such strong understanding. She was a Sotapanna. She had reached the first stage of enlightenment. No wrong view, no wrong idea of self. And she continued to have so many children, so many grandchildren. If someone thought that because of understanding, then one shouldn't have any children, that would be wrong understanding.
And she cried probably more than the average grandmother cried
when anyone died. Expectations lead to disappointments and difficulties, expectations of oneself, and therefore expectations of others. So actually it all comes back to the clinging to the idea of I or me, thinking I should be this way or that way. And because of that expectation or clinging to I, therefore one has expectations of others too, forgetting that actually they're just passing dharmas arising by different conditions.
And I think we often tend to think of the development of the path in terms of having less akusala in life. But really, the development of the path is about having a better understanding of what is appearing at the present moment. And it's beyond control to what extent there will be any reduction in obvious akusala tendencies. For some there may be, and for others it may not appear to be that way. Just because understanding can only develop so much in a single lifetime anyway, the measure of the development of the path is whether there is a better understanding of what is real at the present moment. Just that, not how much or what kind of unwholesomeness manifests in life.
Remember Angulimala, he became an arahant. But just before that, he was about to kill the Buddha. And he killed so many. I mean, one might assume that if he was so close to arahatship, his akusala wouldn't have been that strong, right? But it is.
And was that the question, or was that just the first point of clarification?
Okay, yes. The other one was more basic. So I hear the two words that arise and appear. So, I would like to understand what appear to what. or is that just another special reality that arises, but then it's appeared to Panya? Because I heard that explanation that it's a reality. We say the word appear when it is a reality that appear to or be known by Panya. But this is, you know, it's actually, it's a reality that arises anyway. So I want to hear more about the distinction between the use of these two words.
Some realities obviously appear at the present moment because there is the experiencing of the world, and there must be seeing and visible object, hearing and sound and so forth. We know other realities are arising at the present moment. For example, some of the mental factors, cetasikas, we've been discussing, but they don't appear. They can't be noticed or seen. They can't be the object of understanding unless they appear. So that is the distinction that's being drawn.
When something appears, it appears to what? Can it just appear? Or does it appear to what?
It has to appear to a citta.
That's it. So it reminds one to understand that which experiences. Without that which now arising, experience and object, nothing can appear. But whatever appears, it means that citta arises and experience that object. We talk about citta and cetasika and rupa, but at this moment, people and things appear. Forget about citta and cetasika arising and experiencing all these objects. Otherwise, there would be nothing appear. So now, citta experience, and it appears to citta which experienced it, whatever appears. Sound appears because citta arises and experiences it. Only that particular sound which citta hears, not other sound at all. So what is not known is citta, cetasika, and rupa. Because when one say, I see people or things, he or she doesn't realize that what actually is seen. So come back to this moment, begin again and again.
So Florence, life carries on just as usual. You play with your children, you carry on with your work, you have fun, life just as always, but with more understanding, that's it. So life doesn't change from usual, but with more understanding of what life really is at this moment and what is really precious and important in life.
And what for, then?
Just for the purpose of understanding the truth of what life is at this moment, not the fantasy or the idea that we always imagined. So it's just a question of whether one is interested to really understand the truth or not. Most people have no interest. They just follow attachments as usual, and from birth to death, no interest in understanding anything about what life is, and no idea of all the ignorance or all the attachment there is. And even if there's any idea of attachment, they think it's good to follow. So it's just for the purpose of being truthful and courageous enough to really begin to understand what life really is, and to know that it's just at this moment for an instant, and no self, no one there at all. Without right understanding, one can go through life searching for a meaning or following various practices, going to particular places, looking for special experiences, trying to be calm, trying to avoid stress, always looking for something else, but without any understanding. So actually it transforms life, because nothing to look for, nowhere to go. Life is always just as it is at this moment, conditioned the way it has to be, even if it's painful feeling, or even if one has a diagnosis of Alzheimer's, there is still just reality at this very moment that has to be exactly that way. So understanding is what leads to acceptance and detachment towards whatever is conditioned now.
I'm not sure. I wonder if it's a good idea to distinguish the reality and the concept. For example, the bottle of water here, would it be too crazy that you think this bottle is not real? Can you really touch the bottle?
Yes.
Then why is it not real? You say you can touch the bottle, right?
Yes.
Then why is the bottle not real?
Because you call it a bottle, so it depends on the...
So if I call it a rose, would it be real? No.
But no, because I don't know what is it. The touching is real. The
yeah.
seeing is real, but the bottle is not real.
Then what is touched? If it's not bottle being touched.
Coldness or something
right.
like this.
So you cannot really experience directly the bottle, right?
No.
Right. Okay. Yes. Direct experience.
Did they pass the test?
No. I always love this this question. When first time I was on a hot seat and challenged by a John.
Sorry. But when you say we go from life to life, and then we say we are can experience the reality, so the reality is what we can touch, what we can see, what we can hear, and this is a concept, then how we can say it is real, it is the truth? And
actually it's different cheetahs that go from life to life, and so moments of seeing, just visible objects seen, moment of touching, just hardness, and then thinking, usually with ignorance and attachment, but there can be right understanding. The panya can arise that can directly know what is seen as just being that which is visible, what is touched as just that being that which is hard or cold. So because panya, understanding, can develop, it's the panya, the understanding, that understands the truth of life, what is really there. It's right understanding panya that really can know, actually no bottle is touched, no cup is touched, just coldness appears at that moment. Now we're just talking about the words and beginning to consider wisely by thinking. It's just the intellectual right understanding. But that intellectual right understanding, when it is accumulated, when the pattern becomes firmer and stronger, it can condition the direct understanding of the characteristic of that reality. And then no doubt at all about what it is that is the truth of life. Now, because it's just beginning of thinking about it, in between this thinking with doubt, but when it's really clear that what life is at this moment, what is real, no doubt at all that that is life, and that the development of understanding of the truth of life is what is most precious, what is most important. Is that clear?
No,
please.
No, how that can continue, because we cannot experience without the death, we cannot experience
the
new life.
So the
and then how we can know in advance that will happen?
Okay. how can we know in advance that there is the end of the life and new life and so on?
Why it is not the end and that's it?
So like now, why at this moment, the cheetah now, after it falls away, how do we know it will be followed by another cheetah? How do we know that this cheetah now will not be the end, that actually another cheetah will follow on?
I don't know.
What about the cheetah a moment ago, the experience a moment ago? Was it followed by another experience?
Yeah, one cheetah follow another.
So now, actually, it can be proved that after seeing, there is thinking. After thinking, maybe hearing. So different cheetahs follow each other. So even just intellectually, it's clear that each cheetah has to fall away and another one arises. So there's no person who dies, no person who's born, but just as one cheetah followed another yesterday, so it did this morning, so it did a moment ago. So now each one cheetah follows another, and it'll be like that tomorrow. And the end of life is just the falling away of a cheetah followed by another cheetah.
I don't know why we not create this, because we are afraid that it is the end and then we don't want.
Because the reason it's hard to accept is because we're so used to thinking of a person. So we think of a person or a being who lives and a person who be a being that dies. But actually, now, just as before and just as it'll be afterwards, actually one cheetah arises and falls away, followed by another cheetah. While there are the causes or the conditions from the past, cheetahs will continue because of those conditions. And it doesn't matter if there are doubts or it's not clear, it's not important. Even the doubt now can be known. But actually, the more one understands about reality now and the different conditions for different realities, the more confidence there is that that's how it will have to be tomorrow, next year, and at the end of life.
We've talked a lot about conditions, and we have a general idea that the present moment is conditioned, what is appearing now, the consciousness that experiences and so on. But we don't know anything about those conditions, really. Now, Florence has been asking one or two questions, and we've talked about certain conditions in the past, but really there's no direct experiencing of what these conditions are. So we don't know what conditions the present moment, but if there was a proper understanding of conditions, if one understood fully all of the conditions that operate to make the present moment, then it could be said that that person with that understanding would know whether or not there would be conditions for consciousness to continue at the end of lifetime or the next lifetime. There's no way we can ourselves know the answer to the question. So it's pointless really to speculate, and it's pointless actually to make any assumption one way or the other. The explanation the Buddha gave was what Sarah has said, that life will continue whether we like it or not, as long as there is the desire for continued existence. Because until understanding has come to see the true nature of the worthlessness of these momentary realities we've been talking about, there will continue to be attachment to things and the desire to continue life after life and experiencing seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching and thinking. So what we desire will come our way. If we want more of what we have now, it will keep coming life after life, but not necessarily in the form we want it to. We'd like all the objects in life to be pleasant ones, but that is not something that there is any control over.
Just a follow-up question. Just you're leaving soon, right? Yeah. Just a follow-up question of the bottle. So your good bottle is not real, right? How about the person who sits next to you? Do you agree she's not real?
The present.
You agree, you said the bottle is not real.
Yeah.
Because bottle cannot be directly experienced by you. How about Helena? Is she real?
No.
No, and yourself? And you?
No.
No, and what knows that? If it's not you, what knows that?
Sorry, can you say it again?
Okay, we're on the same page about the bottle is not real, person is real. Mm. If there's no Lawrence, then what knows this? What knows there's no, these are just concepts.
What knows, it's not a concept.
What knows person, just concept. I is only just an idea.
What knows? Thinking. No.
Thinking accompanied understanding. By...
Understanding.
Okay.
Can be with or without understanding, because one is just repeating what one's heard.
Thinking of my friends who are leaving after today. So it's so important if there is anything you doubt about or you'd like to know more, or do you feel confused about all the new things that you heard these days?
I think we must have a break maybe to think again about this, and for sure we start again on the same question again and again, maybe for a while. So no, hard to say if we have questions at the moment, because I think we have too many questions.
The same question doesn't matter at all. We can ask them again and again, and maybe we hear the same again. But it seems always new. I talked to Hang today that whatever we hear the same about seeing, and Ajahn talks again and again about seeing. And it always seems something new, because we consider more, and that's the Dhamma.
Even then there can be attachment coming in between, because one would like to hear the same words again and again. So yeah. There can be attachment even at that time. So any time, different dhammas by conditions. Even in the middle of dhamma discussion, there can be a lot of attachment. There can be wrong understanding, an expectation that behavior should be something different. So actually, whatever appears, whatever reality can be understood anytime.
Yes, it's a very good reminder that we wish to hear again and again about seeing and attachments. It seems Dhamma so normal.
Ajahn mentioned
still,
that once in Bangkok, that people may want to just hear the same words again and again.
Yeah.
You assume they're coming to listen because of understanding, but sometimes it's just attachment, just wanting to hear the words or be close to the teacher
very
or
good,
something like this, and then it's not understanding at that time.
Yeah.
So we cannot tell from the appearance. It's not the outer appearance, whether someone's taking a selfie or sitting in a discussion, that matters. It's the one's own understanding that has to be very natural. No one else can tell from the appearance whether understanding is arising or not, but it can begin to know for oneself. That's all.
Sarah, I have one question. How can we know that we understand? How can we be sure?
I would like Ajahn to say something, because it's just a few
minutes. When one is asked, so one knows, one understands or not, or how much understanding is there. For example, what appears now?
Chitta.
Really, it's very wide word, just one reality at a time, more precise.
Okay.
What appears now?
Seeing.
Really? Seeing, or that which is seen? Which appears?
Confusion.
Good answer.
usually we remember the words, but the reality, which does not appear yet, cannot be known. We are not acquainted to the nature of it. For example, that which arises and experiences is different from that which arises and does not experience at all. It cannot experience. And for the other one, whenever it arises, it has to experience because its nature is arise to experience. So usually in a day, we think about the object which is experienced, but not that which experience. We just learn to know that that which experience is not I, but it's a reality because it's there now. It arises and see. If it doesn't arise, there is no seeing. So it's a kind of reality which just arises to see. It cannot think. It cannot hear. So just one reality at a time should be studied carefully that it's not I at all because it's conditioned. Before it's arising, there's no seeing at all. In deep sleep, there's no seeing. But there are conditions for seeing, so seeing arises. When there's no conditions for seeing, seeing cannot arise. Is this true? Just consider this. The truth of life is different moment of that which can experience, which experience anything, like sound or pain or thought, see? And that experience is conditioned too. No one can make it arise. But after hearing, seeing, and experiences, it conditioned moment of thinking about those reality which has been experienced before. Do you remember me?
Yes.
Is it real? Remembering?
Yes.
Is it you?
No.
This is the understanding. Theoretical or intellectual understanding. Because when there's more and more understanding, it conditions direct understanding of only one reality which appears. Now so many realities appear, not just only one. So it's not clear. It's not clear at all. Only when there's nothing but only one reality appear, by then no doubt about that characteristic at all. So right understanding develops until one knows the words of truth that it can be, can become true. And that is enlightenment. From beginning to understand little by little. And the way it develops is the way it arises. If it does not arise, it cannot have more or begin firm, to be firmer and firmer. So is it firm now that there is no I, intellectual understanding? But it can be later, the moment of direct understanding. We don't know when. It depends on understanding because there must be firmer and firmer understanding that can condition direct awareness and right understanding of what has been heard before. For example, there is touching now. Heart disappear, but no understanding enough to letting go that it's microphone or cup or whatever you take as something. Because if it does not arise, how can the cetasika contact and citta arise and experience together simultaneously, instantly, unknown? So citta arises and when it falls away, it conditions the next citta, no gap in between at all. So very rapidly, uncountable. That's why it seems like as soon as one opens one's eyes, many things appear. But actually, one moment of citta arising, it experiences only one object. No idea, no shape and form yet, only that which is seen. And sanya, another reality arise together and performs its function, just mark and remember. So we live in the world of sanya, memory, all day, all life. Nothing is known. Citta, the experiences, the faculty, the chief of experiences, is not known yet, and sanya is not known yet, and the contact is not known yet, and the feeling, even when very, very pleasant, it's not I, it's conditioned to be for a moment and then gone, and never to return at all. So what you get in this life, from birth to death, nothing after this. If there is nothing arise, there cannot be attachment to that object which has arisen, right? But when something arises, out of ignorance, it is attachment instantly. For example, who doesn't want to see anymore? Who doesn't want to hear anymore? Who doesn't want to experience whatever through eyes, ears, nose, tongue anymore? See, attachment is there, underlying, unknown, all the time. At moment of waking up, one opens one's eyes. If there is no attachment, no desire, no wanting, can there be such move of the eyelid? See, even that is conditioned. The more there is the understanding of the conditions, the more it will condition the letting go gradually, little by little, because of clinging to that which is no more, because it arises and falls away, no more. Each one is no more. But the idea of permanent, the continuation of whatever appears, conditioned attachment to that, having the idea of it, it's there. It's still there. It's still you. But you now, it's not you a moment ago. Different rupas, different jitas, different jetasikas. So actually, those who really have firm understanding of nothingness, because before seeing, there's no seeing, and then there's no seeing again. So actually, from nothing to something, and then nothing again. Actually, what's the use of arising to be for a while, and then nothing more? If it's more firm confidence, it can condition moment of higher understanding. So anyone can become enlightened at any moment when it's proper time, by proper conditions, understanding little by little, from life to life. Because what is true is true. No one can change its truth. No one can change memory to be feeling for a very, very short moment. It arises and falls away in split seconds. That's why it's the magic world. From nothing, it appears as something, and then nothing again. And this is true, the absolute truth. Would you like to understand better? Yeah. It's more valuable, more precious than anything else, more precious than wealth or beauty or whatever. Because if we think of that behind the skin, is it beautiful? So when it's attached to that which is seen, only different color, which create the idea of people and things. And attachment is attached to everything, not only one. In a body, the eye and the hair and the nose and everything. But the space is in between each tiniest group of hardness, softness, whatever is there, can be broken into pieces. Where am I? No one. Where is my body? No. It can be cut off any moment because space in between, arising and falling all the time, unknown, until it is directly experienced. That is the Vipassana Jnana, stage by stage, before the Noble Truth can be discerned. It can be known, not by ignorance, but by Panya. So when Panya arises, it has its function of detachment or letting go. Because it knows the truth better and better, depending on right understanding itself. So there must be the idea of I before there can be no moment of directly experiencing reality as it is, as it's known, as it's taught by the Enlightenment. Can there be tomorrow? Could it be? Who knows? Because each reality is conditioned. This life has to end. And it's the beginning of other person, not this one anymore. Like last life before this life, who we are, who we were. No idea at all. So this life is past life of next life. Everyone would like to know, what about my last life? What had I done? But this life, you know, what you are doing. Wholesome or unwholesome. Speech or deeds. By different kinds of chittas. Because the rupa cannot experience anything. So we have to think and understand whatever appears from hearing, when there are conditions for thinking about it, thinking of what is heard can arise. For example, is hunger real? There is hunger every day, morning, lunch, and evening. Is it real? Is it real? Yes. What kind of reality is it? At moment when it's there, right understanding begins to consider its nature. Otherwise, when it's not there, it's only thinking about it. But when it's there, it's time to study. Study reality when it's there. It's much better than just by words when it's not there. So right now, we talk about hunger. We can think about it. Is there hunger in life? Simple question. Is there hunger? Is it a reality? What kind of reality? This is the point. Not to remember the word citta, cetasika, and rupa. But at that very moment, it's time. If there are enough conditions to begin to consider the characteristic of hunger, which is different from hardness and softness, right? Can hardness feel hunger, hungry? Can it No, it cannot experience anything at all. So what is hunger is not I who am hungry, but what is hunger? Not I. So what is it? We have studied reality, citta, cetasika, and rupa. So what is hunger? This is homework. When it arises, it's time to understand. If you want to know, it's nature. But it can be considered right now because it cannot be rupa for sure, because rupa cannot experience anything. So it's not the body who feels hungry at all. Is it pleasant at moment of being? So what is it? Unpleasant feeling.